This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quick favor, could you hit the subscribe button? It really helps get the show out there so that more people can be inspired by the personal growth that our guests are talking about and take those lessons into their own lives. Welcome to Wellness with Ella, the Deliciously Ella podcast. This is a podcast that aims to inspire you, to empower you, to leave you feeling uplifted. Every week, me and my guests will candidly reveal our personal journeys of transforming times of great difficulty into times of enormous personal growth. How did our guests get to where they are today? What have been their biggest challenges? What practices and habits have really genuinely moved the needle for them, and how do they keep moving forward? Wellness with Ella has the simple mission of giving you unfiltered, empowering conversations that give you the tools, knowledge, and inspiration to transform your own life and your own health. My guests today truly epitomize what this season of the show has been about. The idea that we all struggle with our health, that nobody is immune from life's challenges, that you never know what the person next to you is going through, that personal transformations can happen at any point in our lives, and that whilst all of our journeys are different, the thread that really seems to link everybody's transformation together is learning to embrace vulnerability and sharing those challenges with the people around us. My guests today are Ian Redpath and Jeremy Chopra, better known as All on the Board. If you've ever been on the Tube in London, you'll have seen their poems and their creative messages on the boards around the stations. Lots of people assume that these are written by a team of people, that perhaps it's a scheme created by Transport for London, but actually the whole premise was started and continues to be run by two guys, Ian and Jeremy, both of whom were working on the Tube and had been through incredibly challenging periods with their well-being, and they wanted to ensure that no one else felt alone in their own challenges. So as they watched millions of people commute each day, they felt that simple messages of hope, inspiration, honesty, and clarity that you are never alone in your struggles would maybe help. They've since been seen by tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people, gone completely viral with their wisdom, their vulnerability, and the boards have been shared by so many people, from celebrities like Katy Perry and Michelle Obama. And I was so excited to speak with Ian and Jeremy to find out how their personal experiences have led them to create this online community with such a positive message and a universal impact. And in the conversation, we're talking about finding ways to connect with one another, the importance of both compassion and understanding, and both of them have some really moving stories about their early lives, the experiences with their mental health, and the times they've been able to provide help and support for people during their most vulnerable moments. It's a very revealing and honest conversation, and I really hope you enjoy it. Just one warning though, we do touch on one of their experiences with eating disorders, so if that's something that you would like to skip, then I would really recommend moving on to a different episode. Otherwise, let's get into the show. Well, Ian, Jeremy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
This is lovely. Yeah.
It's so interesting because I think the whole season, this is our last episode of this season, we've really been exploring the power of vulnerability and the fact that we all have these stories, right? No, all our lives are completely different. All our challenges are completely different. You know, I do believe you can never really understand because we've never walked in each other's shoes. That being said, life is just anything but linear. And I think we're not necessarily completely open about what that actually looks like and the power of vulnerability when we take down those walls to actually talk much more honestly about our experiences, be that with physical health, mental health, grief, loss, and that connection that we create as a result. And the reason I'm so happy that you guys are here for the finale of this season is I feel like what you've created is the absolute epitome of that premise, this idea of community through vulnerability, of sharing and of showing people that they're never, ever alone. So I wondered if you could introduce yourself and the concept of All on the Board. I mean, for anyone who's ever been to London or been on the Tube, which is probably a very large proportion of our listeners, they will have seen your boards, or they've probably seen the memes go viral of those amazing quotes and poems that you share. But will you tell us a little bit about yourselves and what you do?
You want to go for it?
Yeah, why not? So my name's Ian Redpath. I used to be a very good dancer, but not so much now. And myself and Jeremy, he's going to introduce himself. We both work for London Underground, and we started doing All on the Board in 2017. And I don't know, we've always been creative spirits, and, you know, we've got our own health and mental health conditions. And, you know, it's just a distraction as to what we're going through. And then, it's just, you know, we want to get the message out there that people are not alone. However lonely they feel, if they are on their own, there are people going through similar things. And wouldn't it be amazing if we could get all the lonely feeling people in the world in a room together or in a virtual room and just say, look, you're not alone, let's get talking, you know? And it's like, you know, the London Underground, we always say it's one of the busiest places in the world, and yet it can feel like the loneliest place, you know? Like, I was on the train today during the peak, and literally everyone is on their own journeys, and it's crazy to think that, like, we're all, like, you know, crammed together, and yet none of us are saying, like, hello to one another, you know? And it's, I guess, you know, that's what life is kind of like. But we want to, you know, get the message out there, you know, no one's ever alone. And, you know, we may be in, you know, different boats, but we do face similar storms, and, you know, let's get through it together, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're lucky that we work in a team on the Underground, not in All on the Board, it's just us on All on the Board, but yeah. For our day job on the Underground, we work in a team that allows us to work all over the network, which is why, even though there's only two of us, our boards pop up everywhere, because we'll be working a different place every day. And that gives us the opportunity to kind of like write different kinds of things for different places, sometimes changing the name of a station just to make someone laugh, or sometimes writing about the event that they're going to just to extend it a little bit, you know, make it a bit more fun inside the journey that they're doing on the Underground. And we've just taken that opportunity, I think, to write things and just put the message out there and connect people, as you're saying. The communication thing has always been a big thing for us, because I think before this, as you say, we are creative spirits, but we've never had the outlet before now to kind of put our things out there. You know, it's all been inside us or on pieces of paper at our homes or whatever. And we came up with this idea one day in 2017. We were just working and we thought, oh, let's write a little silly poem about the event that was going on in the O2 that time. And then instantly people were taking selfies with it and smiling, and you could see straight away, oh, wow, that worked. That actually did something. Because actually before that, there was just a board that was saying, keep right on it. And it was filthy, and people were just ignoring it. They just walk wherever they want to walk. And just by putting a little poem on there that was a bit of fun, it changed the demeanor of people completely. You know, they're going to an event that they want to go to, but you could see that they were just trying to get there. It was functional, right? It was just getting there. And then, yeah, we broke into that and found a way to get into that headspace and break them out of it and say, oh, you're here now, everything's going to be good. And then it was a few months after that we kind of came up with the mental health stuff, writing about what we go through. And that stuff was a whole other thing. It kind of really exploded into this bigger, we can really change things now. We can actually make things better for a lot of people. There are people suffering all kinds of things out there and they feel alone. And I think it was just before we were writing going to start our second book, we were trying to think of, like, how do we want to approach this? And we want it to be a companion, because that's what we're trying to do sometimes. We're trying to be a companion for people as they're coming through that space. And we said, what's our core things that we do on All on the Board? And we realized it was, as you say, make people realize they're not alone, to be kind to themselves and to be kind to each other. And like, I think the world would be a better place if we did all those three things all the time.
Before we sort of rewind and start to understand what inspired you to want to open up that vulnerability and share what you'd both been going through, I'd love to know, is there one or two boards or messages or poems that you've shared that have resonated the most?
Do you know what? The first one that springs to mind is the board that we wrote about endometriosis.
Yeah,
and it was just my wife really gets bad periods, yeah, and we was looking into it, and it was like, no, this is more than sort of bad periods, a symptom. Mm-hmm. So we was like looking into it, and me and Jeremy was researching it, and we just came across this condition, endometriosis, that we had never heard about, and we was like, my God, people go through this, you know. And it's like, we kind of like done a bit of research on it, wanted to put it on a board, and then we was thinking, you know, why, despite looking like we're in our mid-20s, you know, we're in our 40s and that, yeah? You know, it's like, it seemed bonkers for two, you know, men in their 40s to write about endometriosis on a board. And, you know, and yeah, I think that's one of my proudest moments. You know what I mean? I love doing all the, you know, the concert boards and the fun boards and, you know, like celebrities come down for, you know, selfies and stuff. But yeah, it's just that kind of did resonate with a lot of people, and you know, it's yeah.
That's always the one always comes to my mind, and
yeah,
purely
yeah.
because we do a lot of research when we're writing about conditions, unless it's something that we both go through ourselves. Yeah. And obviously, we don't go through endometriosis; we never heard of it before, and we had to do a lot of research, and it was a really tricky one because you're looking at it, you're thinking, right, there is a lot of stuff to unpack and put on a board. But we do have to do a board. It's one of the most it's on the list of one of the most painful conditions on earth.
Yeah. And it's very common.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
very few people know about it. I mean, if you say the word endometriosis to someone in the street, they're going to think you're talking about, you know, some kind of plant or something like that, maybe, you know, you know, osmosis or something like that. Mm. But they're not going to think that that's one of the most painful things around. So we had to do that. And it was really tricky. And then when we put it out and it got this massive response, I mean, it's been a universal response still to this day. Because some of the other boards you put out about conditions, you get this massive response of thank you and that's perfect. But then you get other people who challenge certain parts of it and say, oh, you got that wrong. And then we kind of look back at it and try and...
But then it kind of gets people talking about the condition.
That's the point, isn't it? It's all about
breaking down those barriers, isn't it? And removing the stigmas. And and it's exact, which is why, almost circling back to the beginning, I said I was so keen to talk to you guys about this, is it's exactly that, is that we go through so many things and we don't talk about them. And I think it's writing them down and sharing them with those 4 million people and everyone online every single day to highlight the fact that people are going through this, and to be aware of it and conscious of it. And it's incredibly powerful. And I'm sure, as you're saying, it makes people feel very seen.
Yeah, it's just kind of trying to make the invisible visible. You know,
exactly.
It's like we don't know what one another is going through. I remember telling someone that, you know, I've got ulcerative colitis, and they're like, oh yeah, I get that. And they was kind of comparing it with their IBS sort of thing, or that they'd been out of curry the night before. Oh, I had what you had last night. And it's like, well, no, you didn't really. It's like, do you know what I mean? So it's just like, you know, it's just like, let's talk about our conditions, you know, get them out there. It's like, you know, you may be on a train and you may see some youngster, you know, not getting up for an elderly person. And it's like, well, there could be a reason why they're not getting up. Mm. You know, they could be having chronic fatigue, chronic pains. And, you know, sometimes they get sort of dirty looks on the train. It's like, why are you not getting up for that person? But they may want to get up, but physically they can't get up. You know, it's just, I've had it before, you know, people looking at me. And I've been going through like such chronic pain, chronic fatigue. I want to get up for someone, give them a seat, but I physically can't, you know. It's it's just understanding one another and, you know, being more empathetic and stuff, you know. It's
absolutely. Yeah. As you said, the world needs a lot more of that.
Yeah, do you know what I mean? We do try to make people laugh occasionally.
That's how All on the Board happened, actually. We were writing a TV sitcom at the time on, you know, while we were standing there. And then we started, I don't know how we ended up with getting from that to talking about Craig David songs, but I think it was just because the crowd were coming through.
We were singing Craig David songs.
But that's what I mean.
The Craig David
crowd was coming through, and then we thought, well, what songs do we know of Craig David? And we started singing really badly some of his songs to each other, and we thought, oh, well, let's make a little poem out of it. It was a really short one, but it just there you go.
Like, because it was offering sort of directions to the O2, but kind of incorporating his songs as well. You know, see, so you can imagine walking away to the O2 and, you know, it won't take 7 days to get there, blah, 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 you know, but yeah, it was good.
But people often ask us, you know, how do we go from that to the mental health stuff that we've gone to? And it was just because it was just a natural process for us. Mm-hmm. You know, we're just writing about what we like and the things that make us tick. And we just came up with that at that time. And then we started realizing, why don't we write something a bit more personal, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And for people to be honest with one another, you know what I mean? It's because, like, you know, a lot of people, like, kind of look at, you know, these perceived perfect photos of people online. They're like, why can't I have that? But they're not seeing what's going on kind of behind the scenes and, you know, behind the lens and stuff. It's like everyone is going through their own sort of dramas and problems. And, you know, it's...
And were you both... always open and comfortable talking about it? Because I think having a bit of research on the both of you, it seems like you've both gone through some real challenges, both with your mental health and your physical health. I'd love to understand a little bit more about how that informed this desire to kind of break open the conversations and share that vulnerability. But within that, I'm curious, did you always feel really comfortable talking about how you felt? Yeah. I know my experience, like, it took me so long to talk about my health and be open
I was terrible at that. I went through my whole teens, like, literally from the first few months of secondary school right to through university. I was like a silent person, just kind of hovering around, and it was bad, really, really bad.
And what prompted that?
I mean, like, I probably already had bad self-esteem, I think, before I went to secondary school. But, you know, you're so young, you're just making it through, right? And then in secondary school, when everyone probably recognizes, you go to secondary school, and especially if it's one that's away from where you would have been locally, you're going to have no friends, you're going to have to... everything completely brand new. And I went to secondary school and I had no friends, and I was really bad at making friends anyway. So I made one friend on the first day. It was a boy where we were in a queue for lunch, and then someone bumped into him. He dropped all his coins on the ground and he started crying, and everyone was just like walking past him, and I decided to stop and help him, and we became friends. And for the next 3 months, we became inseparable. We were just like everything together. And it was really weird because I was this person that nobody liked, and I was like a social outcast, and he was probably the most popular person in school suddenly. And yet we were together all the time. And it was just, I think, a day before we were due back to go to school after the Christmas period. In the local newspaper, there was a report of a fire in a house, and he had sadly died. I only got note of it from that newspaper report when I was at another friend's house, and my friend's mum had told me. And I remember I still remember that moment she told me, and I just kind of like did this thing where I kind of pretended like, you know, I don't know what's kind of going on, I don't know if that's real or whatever. And I went to the bathroom, locked the door, and I just like completely just went, like tears and everything like that, but silently. And I think that was where things happened with the silence, because I cried really heavily, but they had no idea that I was doing that. Cleared my face with the water from the sink, and I walked out, and then never talked about it. And then when I went to school, the first thing that happened was, of course, everyone knew that we were inseparable, and they were all the other kids, as they do, they'll come around you at the dinner table, like asking, oh, well, how did that, this happen, and so on and so forth. Or, did you cry? Someone said, did you cry? And I actually said no. You know, and I remember that sticking with me and throughout my school years, thinking, oh, why did I say no? You know, I felt really bad about that. And I think that just affected me really deeply. It was, you know, I guess it was childhood trauma to a certain extent, right? And everything just became really internalized because it was a defense thing for me. So I just went through my whole teen years like that. And I then had, I then developed an eating disorder. So I don't know what it's called now, actually. I haven't looked up what it's called now, but at the time, I think it was called EDNOS, which is like eating disorder with no obvious symptom, where it's not, you know, bulimia, anorexia, or anything like that. It's just different. It's just you have an eating disorder, clearly have an eating disorder, but you don't have a diagnosis that's really quite direct. And I went through my whole teens, and I was extremely undernourished, basically, by the time I left school. And I'm lucky to be here, to be quite honest with you. And it wasn't until I got into my early 20s where I had this moment, just weird moment of clarity, where I woke up one day and there was this sunlight coming through and I just realized I'm going to die, basically. I just heard these words in my head and it was really clear. I mean, I'm sure everyone's kind of had this day where you just like, everything feels really, really ridiculously clear. You can feel the air, you can feel the dust and everything like that. It was like that. It was just for that day. But it was enough to kind of kick me into gear realizing that. And from then I started to try and kind of find a way back. But I still probably, I would say I didn't get into talking about my issues until probably like 30 even. I mean, you know, so we're talking from the age of 12 until 30. I was really bad at talking. I would never be sitting here talking like this, or writing things on the board or putting things out in podcasts or interviews or books or anything like that back then. No way. Even going back, you know, 10 years ago when I first came on the underground, certainly probably wouldn't be talking like I am now. So all on the board has really helped me to do that, to kind of come out more and be able to do this. I still have social anxiety. I still, you know, I can still feel those little shakes that you get inside you that no one can see, the sweaty palms and all that kind of stuff. But one of the reasons why I do things like this is because I want people to realize that, you know, that's how much of my life was, you know, so difficult purely from not talking about the things. Yeah, I mean, like I'm really good at defending, you know, myself from certain situations, but then you don't experience so many things because of that. So
it's such a powerful example, as you said, of the fact that we keep so much inside of us, and you can be interacting with people all day. You might just walk past them, but it might be someone you bump into in a coffee shop or a colleague or someone you're sitting next to on the underground or on the bus or on a plane or just in your life, and you have absolutely no idea exactly that they might have, you know, 10, 20 years of kind of trauma that they don't want to talk about. And I wondered, when you started opening up and you started writing on the boards, did you suddenly feel almost this like release, this pressure off that you felt other people were then opening up to you and saying, I've been through this, or maybe it's something similar or something kind of very different, but equally challenging. And you realize, wait a second, I'm completely normal, because it's completely normal to have these fluctuations.
Yeah, you know what? It was because, as I say, it was such a long period of my life that it became ingrained as a characteristic. So when we started doing those boards, and as you say, people were opening up themselves and sharing it and commenting and so on, I guess I was gaining strength from those, as you say, but it was a very slow process, because we were still wearing masks for the first 3 years. We were anonymous for the first 3 years. So it's like you're kind of coming out, but not really. With all this stuff, you're still behind a mask. And yeah, it was probably like when we took the masks off, that was really hard, because it kind of then goes back, you know, you're there
completely bearing your soul.
Yeah. It's now, yeah, actually I'm the one who's been saying some things, you know, you're the one who's been saying some things. And we end up going through an imposter syndrome period as well, where we're kind of like, what do people really expect us to be? Did they expect us to be who we are? And not knowing that fills your head with all kinds of silliness. It's like, you're never going to know that, and everyone's going to think differently about you. And it doesn't even matter, because as Ian said, we've only ever cared about the words we're putting out, not about who we are in terms of that. And even though we're gaining from it, we gain strength from it. And it does help me to, you know, speak out. We never made it about that. And so it's ups and downs, you know, but then life is, right? You know, your mental health struggles don't just go because you had a realization. You're going to have things that change because it's just the organic nature of the way chemicals work in your brain and the way the world is. You know, this is a different room, but we're talking about the same stuff. And yet I'm realizing certain things right now that I didn't realize before. I might forget something today that I'll remember tomorrow. It's just one of those things, but you have to figure out, you have to come up with tools that kind of help you to navigate those tough parts to get to the good parts, you know.
Definitely. Do you know, it's just getting it out there, the importance of talking, you know what I mean? It's just I used to have problems sort of expressing how I felt, and I'd write it down on a page. And that was a way of getting my feelings and emotions out there. And I remember showing someone, they was like, oh, this is a bit dark, isn't it? But it was kind of like, it was therapy for me. It was just getting all my negative thoughts and feelings on a page. And like, I've still got them in my wardrobe. And it kind of like, it's evidence to me that, you know, I survived that moment, you know, and that's what I was going through in that. And I think as time has gone on, you know, I've realized that talking about your problems and, you know, again, getting it off your chest, you know, don't suffer in silence. It does make you feel better, you know what I mean? It's just, you know, the more we talk, you know, the better we feel, you know, just to lighten the load, you know. You haven't got to carry the weight of the world on your back, you know. You can share it out with others, you know.
And did you have a moment with each other? I don't know. I don't think I've read about this. Like when you first met each other, were you kind of honest about everything you were going through, or did that build up and then you suddenly know what? Had this?
I think
this...
It built up, didn't it?
But the funniest thing is the very first time, he doesn't remember the very first time we met. It was actually, we were on a duty and I remember it being a really hard shift. And I was with some of our colleagues from our team. And then he come walking past and I was like, oh, who's that? I ain't seen that person here all shift. And they're like, oh, that's Ian. He works in the SRT as well. And I was like, where's he been all this time? I thought he was a skiver. I thought like he's taking the mick. I was like, what's that about? Where's he been? We've been like slugging off here all this time. So I went,
was doing my makeup.
And no, he was actually helping out. He was actually doing the job in another part of the station. And then our manager put us together because she said that everyone keeps talking about how we're both creative and coming up with bonkers things and all that on the gate lines. We should do something together. Mm. She started putting us in shifts together and we were just standing around talking like this and coming up with ideas. We came up with all kinds of ideas, some crazy stuff. I think we were just thinking in the middle of conversations.
He remembers the first time that he met me, but I don't remember the first time.
You wouldn't remember that because like you literally just, he was doing the job. But
I think I was on my way to the toilet, you were telling
me. You were.
And I was like quickly high and by, weren't it? Because yeah, I had a bit of
I mean, I can't remember when I finally found out about your condition. I think we just literally just told each other.
Yeah, we just like opened up about it.
I think we just realised that we're both very similar in what how we see the world, like in terms of that kind of caring for people and caring about others around us.
And it just became really
easy to kind of say, oh, that person's a caring... You know, you just get that aura around people.
And you felt comfortable to share your stories.
And this is what gets me. It's like, you know, why should it take bravery to ask for help? Why should you be brave in coming out about who you are? You know what I mean? We should talk about it like we chat about the weather, you know? How does it affect anyone else, you know? It's kind of, we want to like smash stigmas and break taboos and stuff and just, you know.
Generally, that's what we do now. Yeah. We get customers who come up to us on the underground all the time asking us questions, obviously, like the directions for here, directions for there. But sometimes they come over to you and you think that's what they're going to ask and they say, oh, you do the boards, don't you? And it's like, oh, yeah, we do. And then... that you can see the nervousness and it's like, just pretend you're asking us for directions. It'll work out. You know, you'll be able to say what you want to say. Because that's who we are now. We just want people to be able to come up to us and say whatever. Give us a hug if you want to give us a hug, you know. Give us a high five or just, you know, wave from a distance if that's easier for you, whatever. But don't feel like you can't, you know,
come. Do you know what? It's brilliant when people, like, we may get recognised once a shift, maybe twice or three times, but when they come over to you and say, oh, could I get a selfie with you? We're always up for selfies and hugs, you know what I mean? It's a good feeling, isn't it, you know?
It's good. It'd be nice if that became, like, a community thing, like, if people were able to just do that. But, you know, it is difficult. You can understand why it is. It's very different scenarios, right? You can't just go and hug up anyone. You can't just go and do that with anyone. You can't open up to absolutely everyone. But, but unfortunately that translates a lot to people in their own groups where they're not doing that with the people that they know that they can. They just don't feel that they can. It is important because I think in my case with my eating disorder, the thing with eating disorders is you become really good at hiding the fact that you have an eating disorder, even though you don't know you have an eating disorder. Because I was, I was still a child and a teenager, but you don't know that you've got a disorder. You just think this is... what you are. And I was wearing like clothes that would just be baggy and, you know, no one could see how I was and so on. It was destroying communication. It was like, you know, blocking communication. And I'm incredibly good at that. And I'm constantly fighting that part of me saying, that's not helping you. That's not helping you at all. start talking more, you know, saying more. I don't think I've ever actually talked this much about that period, actually, until just now, thinking about it. We've written about eating disorders, and I have mentioned it in the books, but not to this depth, you know. And there's so much. It's ridiculous. It's a long period of life, you know, and it affects so many things. Mm. Those are informative years, you know, going through all of that. I mean, when I went to university, actually, I wasn't someone who lived in halls. So I didn't have a community. I would actually just drive from home to university and home like that. So it, again, gave me the opportunity just not to talk to anyone. You know, you go to lectures, you sit there, you don't say a word. In the seminars, the teacher points at you and you say the most simple answer so you don't have to say anything more. And then the attention goes to someone else. You just find these ways of not talking. Mm. And I think there's a lot of people out there now more than ever because of social media. They can say things on social media, but not in real life. And they feel like that's them talking, but it's not really, you know, because it's too controlled. You know, you've got to be willing to just open up and let things flow. And
do you feel a sense of freedom in a way now that you can speak so openly about it?
This is a really weird sensation right now, talking like this.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Yeah, like this is a really weird sensation right now, talking like this, because it's a ridiculous amount of stuff, and you can't write that on a board. You can't write that even. I mean, you could write it in a book, but it would have to be a really big book, you know. And talking is so much more, because all those little pauses in what I'm saying, you know, all those little intricacies in the things I'm saying, you can't translate that any other way than just talking. I mean, that's why we can talk. That's why we've got voices.
I know. I always think of it as a really interesting experience. If anyone's listening, say they're on the tube or the bus, or maybe they're in their office surrounded by a group of people, if everyone just sort of stopped and then like actually offloaded, you know, what was going on, you know, when people are like, how are you? And sometimes you're like, I'm great. And you really are great.
Yeah.
And sometimes you're like, I'm actually really having a bad day.
Yeah.
You know, this happened, that's happened. I'm worried about this. I'm worried about that. You know, big stuff, small stuff. But we're all like, yeah, good, good, good. Fine, fine, fine.
That's
and I would love this moment if like the whole world stopped and everyone just was completely honest about what was in their brain, what they were thinking, what they were feeling. And obviously, as I said, you'd have an absolute split where some people genuinely are feeling really, really great.
Yeah.
But probably a lot of people are worrying about a lot of things. And I wondered if everyone said it out loud at the same time, how many people would say the exact same thing as each other.
That would be fantastic. You know what I mean? Because like, you know, we all kind of asked each other out of politeness, I guess. Like, yeah, how are you doing?
Yeah.
And then not to be a burden or waste the other person's time. Oh, yeah, I'm okay.
Yeah.
It's like, if you ask, are you really okay? Like a second time, you know, they might genuinely say, yeah, no, I'm fine. But it's just, to be open and honest and that'd be brilliant.
I think there would be poetry in the echo. As you say, everyone would be saying a lot, not everyone, but there would be a lot of people saying the same thing. And there would be a sense of harmony in that moment.
And it's almost, you know, as you were just saying, Jeremy, it's like, what you were going through with your eating disorder created this extreme sense of loneliness, but it's a loneliness that can be fostered by lots of other challenges, you know, be it physical illness, mental illness, grief, but probably feeling very similar feelings of trying to make yourself invisible and not a burden, or feeling like you don't fit in. And again, it's just those sensations being so universal. And Ian, I was wondering what your experiences were like kind of getting to this point and this point of saying, I want to break down the barriers, I want to share.
Yeah, do you know what? It's just like over time, it's like I used to be a train driver. I had a young girl jump in front of my train. It completely messed me up. And, I was scared of the dark for about a year. I couldn't have the lights off. You know, every time I shut my eyes, because what happened, it's like, our eyes met just as the train hit her and she smiled. So I was kind of left with that image. Yeah. And it's, and it just messed me up big time. Subsequently, recently, last year, the girl got in touch with us. I mean, this is like over 10 years later, I was under the impression that the girl had died. So I was carrying that kind of, you know, it was like, you go through all the emotions. You're like, you're glad that you survived that situation. You feel guilt. You think of her family, you think of what she could have been. Could I have done anything more? And then to have the girl like send us an email 10 years later. And Jeremy said to me, do not read the email. You know, it's just going to, you know, but I've kind of like, I've forgiven her and I'm glad that she's alive. And, and I'm glad for her family, but it's something that I can never forget. You know what I mean? I remember having counselling at the time just after it happened. And, the counsellor said, if she was here and she was in the room with you, what would you do? And I said, I honestly couldn't tell you whether I'd hug her or want to hit her. You know, my head was in that place. You know, it's just, just so messed up. But over time with counselling, you realise the importance of talking. You know, I was kind of trying to protect my own family by saying, yeah, I'm okay. But just by bottling it up inside and just, I was really beating myself up. It's like, you know, why am I protecting my family? They're people that I love that would do anything for me. And I can, talk to them and they're there to help me. You know, unfortunately, some people haven't got those people in their lives, but, you know, there are people out there that will listen. There are organizations, you know, that's kind of what me and Jeremy want to do, use social media for good. You know, we see people sharing sort of comments and sort of making friends with one another, you know, over certain like boards that we put on about mental health. And it's like, just to see that connection, it's like, oh, wow, you know, I thought I was the only person going through this, you know. So I think since my late teenage years, you know, having anxiety attacks and, you know, I've just realized the importance of talking and to getting it out there. And, you know, Ella, if I said to you, I go through this, and you might say, well, I go through that too. And then we could know that we're not alone. And, you know, you could share your techniques on how you deal with yours, and I could share mine. You know, it's just important. Talking is so important. You know, it really is. However you do it, you know, by, you know, putting how you feel on social media or, you know, I remember I think it was last year. It was, Jeremy's talking about his eating disorder. I've had this sort of problem for 7 years. It's like a fear of choking, and it affects me sort of like, you know, if I go out to restaurants, you know, I'm kind of like hiding the food and just constantly worried about choking on food, and it's affected my diet so much. And I was sitting at the kitchen table, my wife was on the sofa. And I just had food dribbling out the side of my mouth like a baby. And like, I was making all these gargling noises. And I'm like, I'm so fed up of this. So I just wrote down on a piece of paper, I'm going through this. Is anyone else going through a similar thing? And it kind of went viral. You know, we put it up on social media. It wasn't a board or anything. It was just me not asking for help, but just saying, if anyone else has, you know, something similar going on. You know, subsequently, I ended up on This Morning sort of with the Speakmans, and they were talking me through it. And, you know, it was something that they could never cure overnight, but it was just nice to know that I wasn't alone. And it has improved. And I can now go out to restaurants, like, you know, social occasions, you know. And I've just realized it's like, because I was like, literally, if we was all eating food, I'd be the last to finish, but I wouldn't finish it. And my food would go cold and it just, you couldn't eat it at all. And I was always like hiding food under napkins. But now I just order smaller portions and just realize, you know, when I've had enough, I've had enough. I haven't got to beat myself up about it. It's just nice being with other people, you know. It's talk, you know. Yeah.
Did you feel you were living in a kind of cloud of fear in some ways?
Yeah, big time. Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just, you know, it's kind of like, I was always trying to protect other people, but just like by saying, I'm okay, you know, it's like, you know, you know, putting a brave face on things. But why put a brave face on things? You know, it's just...
And did you think, this is something, just I found that in my own life, because that's what I did for a really long time.
Yeah.
Or just like draw away from people and just give them like a very surface level, like, yeah, fine.
Yeah.
You know, even with people you're very, very close with, that actually it's like really counterproductive. And I didn't, it took me a long time to understand that
and change
because it's incredibly difficult. But actually you're trying to protect people, but in a way you're not, because you're sort of pushing them away and you're not therefore really helping them or yourself to a degree.
Absolutely. And they can see it.
They
can see what you're going through, but they can't really, you know, they want to do everything they can to help. And, you know, yeah.
And did you both or either of you have a moment where you kind of had that internal dialogue of thinking, okay, I've been living like this for however long, and to your point there of almost like writing it down and putting it out there, but saying I don't want to live like this anymore, I need to ask for help, and that kind of being stage one and almost like privately asking for help, and then stage two being like, and now actually I want to break down the barriers so that anyone else it doesn't have to feel the same way.
Well, for me it's like a process over time. It's like sort of receiving counseling and just you know, and I realized, you know, I was obsessively, like, I started obsessively talking to people how I was feeling and the incidents that had happened, to the point where I got to the point where, you know what, I don't want to talk about this anymore. I'm boring myself. And then I kind of realized it was kind of like, you know, I think I'm getting there, you know?
Yeah, for me, it was like going back through that period of with my eating disorder, it was, I had that moment of clarity, but I don't think that came just out of the blue.
Mm.
I think it was building up to that in a similar way to you. Like, I talked to myself a lot, almost like a third person interview in my head. Sometimes you're walking along, like you're talking, you're like, I sound like I'm talking like in an interview in my head. And I was already going through all that stuff and seeing, talking about how inadequate I am and how much of a failure I am and all these really negative things all the time.
That so many of us say to ourselves.
And it was constant. And it was during that period. And because I was, as I say, I was at university, I was going back and forth, not really talking to anyone. I only had myself to talk to. But then I kind of like started to get bored, like you say. You start to get bored of the negative stuff. And I don't know what it is. I must have had some kind of strength in me. And I think that was when I realized there is some strength in me somewhere, because I'm still here. Despite all that negative stuff, I'm still here. So what is that? And then I started thinking about the things that I do enjoy. And I enjoy watching movies and writing stories and all these kind of things. And at that time, I was actually watching the TV show Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And I became obsessed with it. It was like the greatest thing ever. And the character of Buffy was just like this amazing hero who, despite all of this stuff and obviously doing it all in secret, she's still there and she's still fighting for the whole world kind of thing. And I'm like, oh, you know, there's a bit of that going on in me as well. So, you know, I connected with that. And I think it was just after, it was during that period as I was watching, it was just after that kind of thought process, I woke up that day and had this kind of like, I guess, epiphany that I'm going to die. I need to stop this. And I did go to the doctor. And of course, the first thing the doctor did was diagnose me with depression and an eating disorder and said, right, here's tablets, take these tablets. And I was like, oh. So medication, right? So you start taking a medication, and after about a week or so, it started making me nauseous. And that's the one thing that I hate the most out of everything, is feeling nauseous. It's just like, I can deal with most other kind of things, but nausea, no thank you. And I just literally bin them. And I said, right, I don't like that, but that, I obviously need something, because the doctor said I need something and I need something. So what else can I do? So I just found my own solution, which was to start binge eating. Weird thing to say as a solution, but when you were that like on the verge of, I was completely undernourished. I started to binge eat in secret to try and help myself in that way. And it was literally one bite a day. And that became my thing. One bite more a day of a really bad pizza in a local place that I knew was always open. So I'd go there after work, binge on this pizza by just having one extra bite a day, and I started gaining weight basically. And then I started doing other things like exercise. I was like, okay, let me try some exercise. And I think that was when I realized I'm actually stronger than physically as well than I realized I was, because I'm able to do some of these exercises I thought would just kill me. So I started doing that as well, and I went through this period where actually my health got really, really good. I was like, wow. And people started noticing it, and their demeanor towards me was completely different. Like, they weren't so abusive to me, you know, like random comments and things like that didn't happen anymore. That starts to have effect as well. But yeah.
And what do you, are there tools that you do now, or kind of things that, like, maybe just reminders for yourself, or practical things that you come back to?
It is mostly reminders, I think, in the head. And also, obviously, what we do with All on the Board, because when we're feeling that inadequacy or whatever, we just write about it now. And we're lucky that we've got that output, you know, we've got that space to do that. And other people don't have that. But then people do have that, because social media, you can do it anyway, or people around you can talk to. I've got two kids, you know, everything I do is for my family now, you know. So I'm always visualizing them in my head, you know, what can I pass on to them from my lessons? Because they might go through similar things. You know, my parents didn't know what I was going through. So how can I know what they're going to go through, or how can I give them the tools to tell me what they're going through? And, you know, these kind of things.
It's nice just dropping little reminders out there to people. It's like, you know, it's like, you're not weak, you're tired from being strong. You know what I mean? It's just like intrusive thoughts, you know. It's like, oh, the voice in my head. Well, no, actually, you've got control over that voice in the head. You know, you can tell it to shut up whenever you want. It takes time, but you know, you
can learn to find space, can't you, between yourself and that voice?
Yeah. I mean, for a while, you know, it's just like, again, we work on the underground, and like sometimes and it did scare me quite a bit. It's like I'd be walking along the platform, and because of what had happened to me, it's like, you know, I'd get this voice going, oh, you know, you had someone jump in front of your train, why don't you do it? And I'm like, whoa, like, hold on, where did that come from? You know what I mean? It's just, and then, you know, over time you realize, no, hold on. It's like, I can control this. You know, I can tell it to shut up. You know, if you're not going to get on with me or entertain me or like help me out, then, you know, just you
don't. Go away.
Yeah, go away. Yeah, basically. It's just realizing that, you know, it's like perfection doesn't exist. You know, it's like you're not alone, and, you know, we all have, you know, our imperfections are just differences that should be celebrated, you know. It's
And Ian, am I right in saying that gratitude's one of the things that you come back to a lot as well?
Yeah. Basically, just grateful, like, to, you know, celebrate every little achievement like a glorious win. You know what I mean? It really is, you know, just getting out of bed on some days. It's like, you know, yeah, I got out of bed, you know. It's like, you know, I won't give myself a medal for it, or, you know, but it's just like, yeah, you've done all right, you know.
But life's the medal, isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Still here.
Enjoying it.
Yeah, I'm genuinely like, that period of my life, I shouldn't be here considering how things were going. But the fact I am here is just like, oh, I'm still here. This is amazing. As long as I've got, we've all got a limited amount of time, you know, and unfortunately these kind of things end up wasting so much of it. And then you're kind of like trying to catch up. But, that becomes itself a negative thing, because you're like trying to grab everything you can. It exhausts you again. So you've got to just like accept sometimes you have amazing things happening, some days you're just too tired, but you're still here. And as long as you're here, keep going and enjoy as much as you can. You know, everything from a cup of tea to just being out in what's not raining, or when it is raining, just enjoy the rain, whatever it is, you know. Just try and find some enjoyment in it. And when you can't enjoy it, just accept tomorrow's going to be better. You've got through really bad days before. There's going to be bad days in the future. There's going to be good days in the future. And yeah, the gratitude is like, actually, with what we're doing now, I mean, here we are, you know, it wasn't until we're almost 40 that All on the Board happened. So every little thing, like meeting you, like doing this kind of thing, all these kind of things that we're doing, is just like amazing to us. It's like blowing our minds every single time we do this kind of stuff. It's like, how comes we're doing this? Well, we're here because we got through that stuff and we never gave up. So if we can be here at this kind of, you know, age, having any kind of success, if you want to look at this as success, then everybody should just be willing to keep going. And, you know, you never know what might happen. You might come up with something amazing and do something amazing.
And just what we do come across a lot of people that have like anxiety attacks on the tubes, you know, because they're crowded, they're hot, and, you know, and it's just to, like, you know, if you have an anxiety attack, write down how you're feeling. And next time you have one, you know, it's evidence to you that you got through it. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah.
It must be really humbling and kind of fascinating at the same time, watching everyone on their journeys every day. It's this like, I always think it's interesting on the tube or any kind of crowded space like that to watch people go about their days. And I guess I've become so interested and attuned to how people seem to be feeling and how they're interacting with one another that I've just become fascinated by watching it. But you can really see people who are struggling or feeling down, but the way that it is quite invisible. I'll never forget, I had this tube journey. I was at work in by Liverpool Street, which is in East London. And my mother-in-law had been very, very ill for a year. And when we knew we were reaching kind of towards the end, but obviously things turned really, really quickly. And I was literally about to walk on stage to do a talk. I'd had the microphone on. I just had one of those weird feelings to check my phone. And so I did. And I had 3 missed calls from my husband. So I obviously called him back, and his mum had had, she just, something had turned, and it was really clear that actually we'd gone from thinking we had months to thinking we might have hours or you know, max a couple of days. So I literally just walked out. I didn't even tell anyone I was leaving, and there was this whole crowd of people, and I literally just walked out. And it's that strange thing, exactly as we were talking about earlier, where you're completely numb. You're like in this busy, crowded, like events, you know, 10,000 people in the space, but you're completely alone in it. And I walked to the tube, and I got on the tube. And when I sat down on the tube, and it was the middle of the day, so it was relatively quiet, and I just had this complete breakdown. And it was absolutely hysterical. And I was going all the way across London to West London, where my mum was going to pick me up and drive me down, because my husband was already with his family and they don't live in London. I cried the whole way, and no one spoke to me. And it's one of those, you know, you have those experiences. I don't say this as like, sure, everyone on the tube that day was so nice. I don't say it as a criticism, but it was one of those, just those moments that stick with you where you think, this is so weird. Yeah. The world's got to change. Like, yeah, there's something wrong with this. Like, as in I was, you know, young in my 20s, and I was there, and, you know, I was like dressed for work. So I clearly needed help.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
no one even looked at me.
Yeah.
It was anyway, and it always struck me as this fascinating thing of everyone going through things, but yeah, we're so scared to say the wrong thing that we don't say anything. And I think what you guys are doing of putting yourselves out there and always saying something and letting people see that every day when they're on their way to work, having those moments, it's just amazing.
Do you know what? I just want to say, if these microphones weren't in the way, I'd have come over and given you a hug. Yeah, because you're right. It's like, it is weird. It's that we've got all these tools now to communicate with, you know, social media and that. And yet we are kind of like in our own little cocoons. And it just seems the art of conversation is kind of like disappeared. You know, I think we should have, one day a year, but it should be, they should put up posters where, you know, on your tube journey, you've got to say hello to at least 10 people before you get to your destination. You know, I mean, how crazy would that be? But it would be nice, you know, or you've got to hug 3 people if you want to before you get to your destination. You know, it's just, it's mad. Just everyone on their own little journeys, and just, it's just like, kind of like, you know, I was on the tube the other day, and it's just like, I think there was about 20 people on the carriage, you know, it wasn't during the peak. And I counted how many people were on their phones. And out of the 20 people, there was like 17 people on their phones. And it was like,
yeah, you're kind of missing everything around you.
Yeah, yeah. I kind of miss the days of newspapers and like elbows, like kind of nudging you and stuff, you know.
You can't do that anymore. There's too many people packed in now to even get a newspaper out. Mm. But no, it's interesting you're saying that about your journey that time, because I'm currently off work because I'm grieving, because my mum passed away at the end of January. And it's been really tough because it was really sudden. And I'm going to be going back to work in a couple of weeks' time. And it's been playing on my mind a little bit, like, because all our followers kind of know, and they're probably, you know, thinking when they see me, they're going to give me a hug, or they're not sure if they can, or whether they can say hello, or what to say. And I'm thinking in my head, I don't even know how I'm going to react.
Mm.
So we're all thinking like, we don't know. So why not just do what is natural to you? You know, like, people want to come over and give me a hug, people want to come and say hi or wave in the distance or whatever, thumbs up, whatever, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, because I might well tear up or might cry, because that's how I do things, that's me in general. And I don't want people to feel like, oh, that's really awkward or bad because, you know, he's crying. Tears are just messages from the heart, right, that have to come out, and they come out in the way that they come out. So it's a weird thing that's been playing in my mind, like, I'm going to cry. I definitely am going to cry at some point. And I don't want to weird anyone out and make them feel like, oh, they're the reason why I'm crying or, you know, anything like that. And then you go through that whole, oh, I'm trying to protect people from feeling bad about things or whatever like that again. It's like, well, no, not really. It's just the way it is.
It's just a part of life, isn't
yeah.
it? And it's so interesting how scared we are of saying something because we're scared of saying the wrong thing. And I remember, you know, talking to my husband about it afterwards and, you know, he felt... You know, and I'm not sure if this is how your experience at all, but like so lonely because people often don't say anything because they're scared that if they say something, they'll upset you or they'll say the wrong thing. But as a result, you end up feeling really cut off because no one wants, not that they don't want to talk about it, but as I said, it's the fear of saying the wrong thing that means people often say nothing.
Yeah.
And it's a really interesting one, again, just about breaking down the barriers. And I think the more we talk about all of our experiences in our life, the more comfortable everyone is to say, okay, you know what, it's okay to talk about it, it's okay to have whatever emotional response to it. And as a result, we all feel infinitely more connected and compassionate to each other.
You know what, I think because of that period of me being completely isolating myself to so many people and everything around me and society in general, it has given me this kind of particular ability to spot that in people who I have no idea who they are. And I think that's probably like what happened when I was working on the tube that day. And the lady, it was incredibly busy. It was King's Cross Station. So you can imagine really busy. And it was literally just me and one other member of staff there. And funnily enough, talking about rule breaking and stuff like that, earlier on, we were saying, I was breaking a rule on that duty that time because I was told to go to another part of the station, which would have left my colleague on their own. And it got incredibly busy, but I decided to stay with my colleague. Like, I disobeyed orders, basically, stayed with them. And then this lady came through the crowd and it was just like this crazy thing where it was almost like a light spotlight on that one person in this crowd that I saw. Like, oh, she doesn't seem right. Someone doesn't seem right. And I just asked her, are you okay? And she kind of stopped, I think just shocked by the fact that I spoke to her and stared at me what seemed like forever, but it was literally just seconds, and just stared at me and said, no, actually, no, I'm not. And then, you know, long story short, she eventually admitted that she was going to do something. And I had effectively, you know, broke that thought process and stopped that happening by just saying, are you okay? And obviously, you know, there's all the science that you don't say, are you okay? There's because it's a really easy one to just say yes to. But if you see, you can, there are other ways you can say things and keep talking to people and find out you can ask them a second time or a third time or find another way to ask them an open question. But if you don't even say anything, that moment is gone. And then that, you know, you don't know what's going to happen then. So like you say, you know, we're scared to say the wrong thing, but saying something is so important, even for moments like that. It's so important just to say something, whatever it might be.
Did you ever stay in touch with her?
No, it's kind of like what happened with you, wasn't it? Like you don't get the information, you know. Once it's out of your hands and it's now in the police hands or whoever, you never hear anything again. So you don't know, you know, did you have a real impact over any? But if you've given that person one more day, the other people can come involved and fix things or help things or whatever. But yeah, it was like 45 minutes. She wouldn't let go of my arm, like. The police came and there was a psychologist and all this and that, and she wouldn't like let me go. She'd become like attached to what I was saying as like, you know, the person that she trusted in that moment. And I think I'd probably be the same as well. I think anyone would be, you know, you realize that, you know, this person has kind of done something for you and you don't know the other people around you and you're in that space that's such a bad place that some people end up in. It was what it was, but you know, I hope, I hold on to the hope that things worked out for her, you know. And that was the first time I had another lady, like, I think about 4 or 5 months later at the same station as well, but this time on an actual platform where I intervened as well. And we've both done that. We've both, you know, we've both intervened with people in all kinds of situations, panic attacks. How many times we've done events where someone's having a panic attack and they don't know what to do and they've never had one before. They think they're having a heart attack and you just kind of like get them through it. You know, it's part of the job.
Yeah.
And it feels incredibly good when you help someone like that. You know, that's one of the best parts of our job, I think, on the underground, separate of all on the board. It's one of the best parts of our job is those moments, because you actually feel like you're making a difference. And I think we've gone through it. We've always wanted to make a difference. I mean, I certainly I have. You know,
you
in this life.
Are.
Yeah, now yeah. we're in a position where we are making a difference in an extended manner. So.
And just, you know, what we went through with the pandemic, you know, just being told that we've got to keep apart, you know, it's just, surely it should make us realise how much we really need each other, you know. It's just, I've never, you know, what you was talking about gratitude, I'm so grateful to be able to hug people again. You know, to be able to, you know, to hug my family and my loved ones. You know, I remember sort of meeting up with my mum, like sort of during the pandemic, and she had bought this. She looked like a 5-foot condom. She had bought this Mac where she was able to hug me.
Oh my god, yeah. I saw those on the internet. Yeah. Didn't know anyone actually had one.
No, she did. Yeah, and it was the strangest thing. So like, we kind of met in a car park, kept our distance. We kind of run together for about 10 seconds. She told me how long I could hug her for with this 5-foot condom on or whatever it was, and just being able to hug each other, and you know, and that should have taught us how much we need each other. You know, just being like isolated in our own homes, it's just I do appreciate people a lot more since
this is probably there. Quite a hard question, but if you've learned one thing from starting to share your experiences and writing these messages of hope and understanding and they're making people feel seen and understood, or giving them that optimism and pause for thought, what do you think that one learning might be?
I don't know about you, it's just I realize that, you know, it's a big world, and however lonely I feel, I know that I'm not alone. And you just see other people saying the same thing, you know, it's just, we're not alone. You know, we should be all in it together, you know, no matter our circumstances. You know, it's just that we go through similar things, we have similar conditions, and just we do need each other, you know. It's we go through good days, bad days, but we have days, and we just should be there for each other, you know.
I think also that we're all stronger than we realize, because there's some people who send us messages and say, oh, you sent at the right time, thank you so much, if it wasn't for you I wouldn't be here. It's like, well, we're your cheerleader, but you're the one who's been taking the weight, and you're the one who's got you here to read the message in the first place and take the message in, because, you know, it's all perspective. They could read the message. Some people do read the message and say, oh, that's a load of nonsense. And the other person reads and says, oh my God, that's a perfect message. It's like, it's the same words. You're just both reading it a different way, and it's impacting you differently. If you want to choose that it's the wrong words, then you're going to see it's the wrong words, and then it's not for you, but you're still here. Something's getting you through here. And the other person finds something in there and it's getting through, but it's you're both getting through because of who you are, and so many things you have no idea of in your past and happening to you right now. And everyone has a strength. That's why you're still here. Sometimes things get too much, you know, and then unfortunately it doesn't happen. But sometimes you get into a ridiculously stressful, dark space, and yet you get through it, and you've got through it because of you, you know.
Yeah. And just to cut in, just the importance of kindness, honestly, really, you know, it is so important to be kind to one another. You know what I mean? It's just, you know, it's like being kind to someone, it gives you a good feeling. They're obviously getting a good feeling, because, you know, and then it's just the whole sort of passing it on effect, you know. It's just, you know, we don't know what one another is going through. So just be kind. Use social media for good. You know when you can have banter and stuff like that, but just use it for good. You know, we should be building each other up, not breaking each other down. You know,
exactly that. Be kind to yourself, kind to others, and know that you're not alone. And literally everything will be wonderful to live amongst, really.
I love that. Thank you both so much. And thank you for sharing so honestly. Honestly, it makes... I know you can underestimate what a huge difference it makes to people's lives.
No, thank you.
So I hope everyone listening has really felt that. But I feel so, so grateful for both of your time today. Thank you
so much. Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much.
I have to say, meeting and talking to Ian and Jeremy was a real highlight of 2023 so far. All of our guests are spectacular, and they all have these extraordinary stories that I know I personally have been deeply inspired by. But I think what resonated so much to me was how different both of their stories were, how much their vulnerability has inspired truly tens of millions of people, and shown that whilst it sounds simple, being just kind and compassionate and thoughtful to one another is so incredibly important. You know, we really don't know what other people are going through. You will walk past hundreds, maybe thousands of people, depending on what you're doing in any given day, such as walking through the tube or the underground or a bus or however you move around where you live. And you just don't know what the person next to you is going through. And I think both of their stories really illustrate that. And so I think that lens of awareness and of compassion is just so important for us to create the world that we also want to live in. Equally accepting support and love and compassion, again, from our friends and family, even when we feel like we want to isolate. Again, it sounds simple, but I think it makes the world of difference to sharing those challenges and knowing that we're not alone in that. And then within that, finding moments of joy, of gratitude, even in the most boring or difficult days. And I think that's what their signs are all about, is trying to find a pause in the kind of minutiae of the world that we live in and the kind of daily grind, as often we can look at it, and find those moments of hope, of inspiration, of optimism. So I hope you found it interesting to hear what they've been through, the tools that they use. Remember, we have all of those tools at your disposal on the Delicious Ciela app for relating back to this episode, but also every episode in this season. If you don't have the app yet, there's a free week's trial so you can get started with absolutely no commitment. And as always, I would love to hear your thoughts on this whole series, on the episode. I will miss you while we're on a break. So we're going on an Easter break now. It's the end of this season. But please do email us, podcast@deliciousciela.com. You can find us on social @deliciousciela. And while we're on a break, we'll be re-releasing our best of episodes. So the episodes that you've loved the most and also that I feel are the most impactful in terms of improving our health and our well-being. So they'll span from the last 5 or 6 years, covering everything from period power to the importance of sleep with Matthew Walker, stress, your day-to-day environment, how food affects our mood. So a huge amount of information, a wealth of knowledge to inspire your everyday health. So I hope you enjoy that. I will see you soon. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of our community. And a huge thank you to Curly Media, who are partners in producing the show.